Okay. I make it 9:50. Everyone agree?
Aye.
And coffee is at 10:45. Is that right?
Yes.
Brilliant. Okay. So, I have to begin by saying thank you for inviting me to come and speak. I saw the illustrious list of previous speakers. You've had Roberta Rominger, you've had Neil Thurgood, Principal of Cambridge Theological College of Art. All these famous people, and now you've got a mere minister from Reading to come and address you this year. And you may wonder why the theme church growth? What a bizarre, strange kind of subject to pick. I have to say I am no expert. That's not a good way to start, is it? I'm coming to talk to you about church growth, but I'm no expert. I have a fantastic interest in church growth, and I've been doing a lot of reading about church growth. In fact, so much so that when I was at Theological College 12 years ago now, it was one of those things that I looked into, even though it wasn't a module on our syllabus. No surprises, the URC doesn't have it as a syllabus module, but I actually did some reading around church growth way back then. And if I'm honest with you, I'm currently at a church in Reading, which still has the same number of members as it had when I started 11 years ago. So, now, that doesn't sound particularly impressive, except for the fact that most churches have seen a 3% decline, which means we'd be having about 30 people less than we currently have, if I was in an average church in the UK. So I'm hopefully coming with a bit of experience of trying to hold on to people, even if we've not managed to grow. And it's fascinating, when you look at the statistics, in the 11 years that I've been at Park, we've actually received 50 people into membership. And as I just said, the numbers have stayed the same. So pretty much there's 50 new people and we've lost 50 members, either through moving away out of Reading or through death. So interesting. We're in an interesting place. But I hope I can share some of my experiences, some of my research, particularly picking up some of the Anglicans' work. They've done a lot of research into where churches are growing and what are the key things in the recipe for a growing church. So that's a bit about why I've chosen that as a topic. I could have chosen Reformation history, because last year for my sabbatical I travelled around to Wittenberg and Geneva and Zurich, visiting places connected with Luther, Calvin and Zwingli. But that's all history. And as my middle son always says, there's no future in history. He's not studying history at university. He wants to go and do marine biology. I think that's just because he wants to go and be by the sea. I'm hoping this is going to work now. It was working a second ago. Let me tell you a bit about myself. Oh. Isn't it wonderful? Modern technology. There you go. This is my family. As you can see, Susie you've already met. She's on the left-hand side. We've been married for 24 years. And I've got three children, and I still get their names mixed up. So if I concentrate, I'll get it right. The middle one, no, the eldest son is Andrew. He's 21, just turned 21, and he's just beginning an internship at Christian Aid this year. So he's just moved to London. Susie's just come in at the back. I can embarrass her again. This is Susie. You've met Susie. And my middle one, Toby, he's 18 at the moment. He's 19 next month. That's the problem, isn't it, with children? They keep growing and getting older. So I just get to know how old they are, and then they change again. So he'll soon be 19. He's the one going to Bangor University to study marine biology. We're all relieved that we've got our results for A-levels. And this is Amy, and she's sat at the back. Give us a wave, Amy. The long-suffering Western family. We've had a fantastic time in Reading. We've been there 11 years, as I said, and the congregation at Reading are wonderful. I have to say that because Doreen and Gay and Les are here, and I could tell you all sorts of things about me, but then they would correct you. So I'm not going to say anything about me. You can find out from them all the truths. But we've had a fantastic time in Reading. It's been a wonderful place for the kids to grow up. In fact, Amy only remembers Reading now. But prior to Reading, we were in Manchester for 4 years, where I trained at Northern College. And before that, because I'm not as young as I look, I did have another career. I was a primary school teacher for 10 years, working with little year threes right up to year sixes. And that was in Bournemouth. Actually, we lived in Bournemouth. One school was in Christchurch, one school was in Poole. Before that, I trained to be a teacher in Exeter. Before that, I met Susie at Ginger Group Project. Does anyone remember Ginger Group Project? Yeah? It was a mission project set up by the URC, extremely innovative, and it gave young people the opportunity to go around the country helping churches to do all sorts of projects. Fantastic opportunity. I think we must have visited, 20 or 30 different churches everywhere, from the north of England, right up to Newcastle, out to Merthyr Tydfil, down to the southwest and into... And we actually came to this conference centre as part of our Ginger Group year. So we've been reminiscing. We've been going, oh, yes, that's the same. As I'm sure you do every time you come back, you go, oh, that's different. And that, oh, no, that's still the same. And we were trying to remember whether we actually used the chapel or whether we just came in here. But I'm pretty certain we were mainly here for Fury Assembly. That's what it used to be called. It's now called Youth Assembly. Fellowship of United Reformed Youth. So Susie and I met, and we got married after we met at Ginger. We're not the only couple that met on Ginger Group, but we won't get distracted by that. Before Ginger Group, what did I do that? Before that, I did a degree in chemical engineering, which is the most obvious route into primary school teaching, and the most obvious route into ministry as well. But I think those different interests and those different backgrounds have given me a particular approach to my ministry, as of course everyone's background gives into their ministry. So it's very much, as an engineer, I look at things and I say, what is the problem to be solved? It doesn't quite work always the same way in ministry. But in a sense, one of the things about our theme this morning is, what is the problem? What are the things that are stopping church growth? So hopefully, as we go through the week, we'll get a bit more insight into what it is about church growth. This is today's book of the day. We've got a theme of each day. We've got theme music for each day. Thanks to Mel and Mark for sorting that out. We've got the theme this morning was Mission Impossible, wasn't it? The theme of that film, great action movie. But the book of today is this one, called Church Growth in Britain. Interesting, this book. When I picked this book up, I instantly recognised things in here that I've been saying for, I don't know, 5, 10 years. This was the first time I'd seen it written down. So some of the things that I thought, no, this is my experience. Why is nobody else agreeing with me? Why do I go to Mission Council and they all go, oh no, it's all doom and gloom? Whilst I'm thinking, actually, it's not a disaster. We're not at the end of the world. So this book, I actually wrote a review for Reform. You may have read it, you may not. Don't know who reads Reform these days. and I submitted it, and they said, oh, we don't normally take book review sent in on spec, but they did actually publish it. So Church Growth in Britain by David Goodhue. He's done an awful lot of research over the last 30 years. I'm going to quote from this book several times this morning. So on the book shop, there is a copy of this book, apparently, but if you just want to have a little flip through and see if it's worth ordering, have a look. It absolutely reinforce those feelings that I had about the things that affect church growth. And the fact that church growth is possible and it is happening. It's not impossible, it is possible. Okay, now Les said to me, we don't mind what you talk about really, as long as we have a bit of a laugh. So I said, okay, I'll include some cartoons to make sure you can have a laugh. This little cartoon, if for those that can't read this caption, is a little boy building sandcastles. There's a little label that says church. And the caption is, but Brian, I'm telling you, that's not what the pastor meant by church planting. Yes, we're not going to go out and build sandcastles, or even Jenga towers, but it's a good visual, so I like that. We're not talking about buildings. I'm not really talking about buildings at all over this next week. Because we're talking about the church, and the church is the people. I'm sure you'll all agree. You've heard it a million times. It's about the people, not buildings. So that's one of the things for that little cartoon. But I've just put in a few cartoons. Some of them are completely random. And if you don't understand my humour, that's fine. You're with everyone else. I don't use too much humour at park because they don't always get it. Well, not my humour anyway. This is the quote to start you off from page 8, right at the beginning of this book. This is really significant. This is the conclusion of a complete review, and this includes all churches. So I know they've got people here from Baptist churches and Anglican churches and URCs and non-denominational churches. You're from all over. This is about all churches in the UK. It is likely that as many churches have opened as have closed in Britain during the last 3 decades. That's since the 1960s. Although within any given region, the balance may tilt in the direction of decline or growth. So he's saying it's not consistent across the whole UK. But overall, if you count up the number of churches today, it's the same as 30 years ago. Newspaper headlines and book covers which presuppose vast numbers of church closures are misleading. Misleading in their failure to note the similarly substantial number of new churches which are opening. Fascinating. Fascinating. This is that key finding, which is my starting point. And so I'm going to ask you this question. What about your experience? What about your experience? Because I'm suggesting that you probably wouldn't have guessed at that last quote. You wouldn't have guessed that there are many churches now. Because we've already prayed for churches that are closing or merging. Or ministers that have got 3 or 4 churches to look after. So I wonder if we can start with this question. And this is going to be interactive. It's not all me talking. Just talk to someone near you, maybe 1 or 2 people. What, in your experience, do you think are the factors significant in decline? The significant factors in decline in your experience? No right or wrong answers, just what do you think might have affected decline? And Mark's going to run around. Chat to yourselves, come on. You've only got 2 minutes, then we're off. Mark? Apparently she's bitter. Am I allowed to say that? I'm not allowed to say that. I didn't say that. Okay, hands up. Some other suggestions. What are the significant factors in decline, in your experience? Go on, I'm going to start at the back and then there'll be someone over in this corner.
When I go to church, I go to St. Martin's in the ballroom. The reason is the area I live. They're Muslims, they celebrate Ramadan, and I've never been educated to do Ramadan. Plus the fact that I had a cat given to me after there was a Ramadan gift sat here last week.
Right, so it's the changing nature of our communities can massively change. So if there's less Christians in a community, then it makes sense that there'd be less people in church. Okay, Janice, and then there's one at the front here.
I can remember back some time ago when my son was at university and he phoned to say that he was quite ill and could we take some medicine up to him, and the only place I could, this was a Sunday morning, The only place I could think of was going up to Sabre Centre in Reading where there was an internal chemist, you know. So instead of going to church, I gave my apologies and we went up, and that car park was crowded.
Yes.
I think a lot of families go Sunday morning shopping. The other thing, I think, is you see all of the games fields.
Yes,
with
the
people
sports.
Playing rugby,
yeah.
And football and other things.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The change in culture. There was a time, many years before my time, when you couldn't do anything on a Sunday apart from go to church. But now you can go shopping, you can go watch sports, you can do all sorts of things. Next one.
In, in our little area, we thought it might be something to do with the fact that we're still doing 25 years later what we were doing in the past.
Right.
And the culture has changed, but absolutely. Churches not haven't necessarily.
Absolutely. Oh, you don't need me here. I can go now. Yes, if we're still doing what we did 25 years ago, it may not be relevant.
I think my thoughts echo Wendy's, yeah. In that we had quite a large Sunday school group with my Littlands group.
Yeah.
Some of the children were leaving because they were finding the structure of the service very difficult. Yeah. I tried to intervene and was told, well, our children had to do it that way.
Yes, there's nothing like being felt welcome in a place, is there? There's one way of chasing all your children and young people out, is to make them feel unwelcome. Is there another one on this side? Two.
What we came back with is parental pressure. The other thing is, young people are moving on with the older people dying off. The other thing that's come to mind is, I suppose, how do you make religion relevant, actually interesting, with the gun church?
Yeah, absolutely. It's got to be relevant, it's got to be interesting, otherwise people won't come. There's so many other things to do.
My point's different wording for the same thing. The church always had young people coming in, and the basic inputs was from Sunday school, Boys Brigade, Scouts, organisations like that, where they were taught the Bible stories, and gradually, as they grew up, they came into the church. That's gone, because the young children don't want the Boys Brigade, they don't want the Scouts now, they want different things. The culture's changed. If we can attract the young ones back in at the bottom, just matter how many die off the top, they'll be coming through all the time.
In theory, you're absolutely right. I can share with you some interesting statistics about Scouting. Scouting in the UK is on the up. Their numbers now are higher than they were 10 years ago. They're predicting a further increase in membership over the next 4 years. They've just produced a new plan for 4 years. So actually, young people and scouting, I don't know about Boys Brigade, but and guiding, those numbers are blossoming. But one of the challenges I think we face as church is how do we integrate? How do we get those families that are part of our scouts and our guides part of our worshipping community? Brenda?
We're just so much more mobile than we used to be. So weekends we go and visit maybe elderly relatives because we're living longer, or we've got children in New Zealand and we go there for 3 months of the year, things like that.
Yeah. Absolutely right, Brenda. I didn't tell you in my introduction, I've broken a record being in Reading because I've never lived in one house for longer than 6 years, and I've never lived in one town longer than 10 years until I came to Reading. Such a wonderful place, why would anyone want to leave? Anyway.
The other aspect is that the culture outside the church has changed so radically, and then when we ask them to immediately come into a church service, that's going to be a totally alien concept to them. And instead of expecting people to jump straight in at the deep end, we've got to introduce them gradually into the church, and that's perhaps church in many respects isn't ready for that, and it's starting to change. I'm glad to say I've seen things like Fresh Expressions, but that is part of the problem.
Thank you. That is something we're going to come on to, the whole thing about different ways of engaging for the different cultures, because actually there's not just one new culture out there, there's loads of different cultures, and one of the massive challenges we've got is how we can accommodate people from very different backgrounds.
Just an interesting experience. Most of the growth where I can agree with you is tends to be at the sort of Pentecostal end of theology.
Yes.
But we had an interesting experience that the Pentecostal church meets in a school next door to our church. And one morning, a lady turned up to go there and it wasn't meeting. And she came to us. And we thought, she's going to find this terrible. She stayed for coffee afterwards and had been most encouraged and refreshed by our worship. Is our image in the press and generally somewhat different from what we really are?
Very interesting point. We're going to stop there. Thank you. There may be other comments you want to share them with me later over coffee. You've picked up some really important themes already. You know, you are so well informed. It's fantastic. Let me share with you one of the things from the findings. Large parts of the white British church are declining. Black, Asian and minority ethnic church going is not declining. In fact, it's rapidly on the rise. multicultural Britain has led to marked church growth in Britain. This is particularly true in our cities. This is where London has seen massive church growth and lots of new churches popping up. But a lot of them are catering for particular groups. You mentioned Pentecostal churches. We've got a group that use our church buildings on a Saturday. Very Pentecostal in their worship. They are the Seventh-day Adventist church. And one of the fascinating things I found is, as I was listening one day when I was in there, they were singing the same hymns that we sing. So actually, we're not that far apart in a lot of cases. But they like to be together and worship in the style that they like. Look around us here at Swanico. You know? Korean Church of Leeds are here. The African Church are here. I noticed in the publicity for the conference centres, they've got a mixture of white and black faces. That's not irrelevant. That's because church growth in the UK has been largely in black, Asian and minority groups. So one of the questions I have for you is, how many of you are in congregations where, let's say, there's at least one person who's not got a white face? So black or an Asian. Excellent. Good look around. Put your hand up then if it's only white faces in your congregation. Not so. Mostly. Okay, hands down. We've got a mixture there. Now that's interesting. Because I think one of the things that, you know, we have to recognise is that most of us are in churches where if it's traditional white British, we have seen decline. So there's an interesting question there about, well, do we need to change to be more multicultural? Do we need to attract Christians from other backgrounds? It may just depend on where you live. Yeah. You know, I recognise that. We live in Reading. It's hugely cosmopolitan, hugely multicultural. We are surrounded by Asian families, many of whom are Muslim, but some are Hindu, some are Sikh. We've got one Methodist chapel that is now the Hindu temple in Reading. We've got a Sikh Gurdwara in another Methodist church, used to be. So Reading is a hugely multicultural area. But we've attracted within our congregation people from all parts of Africa. We've had people from Malaysia. We've had people from Iran. We've had people from all different places. And I think that's significant. I think that's significant about the way the church is changing. We can't assume because someone's Asian or because they're black that they're not Christian. And in fact, some of the most passionate Christians we've got are here. And some of the refugees, we prayed about refugees, didn't we, from Iraq? Yeah? We know there's a family that live two doors down from our church who came to this country because the father was killed because he was a Christian. So they sought asylum here in the UK. Fantastic Christian family. And they worship with one of the Asian fellowships in Reading. But it's a change. So one of the reasons we might not have realised that there's all this church growth going on is because maybe our churches are multicultural. It's not the only reason. So what David Goodhue, he's a name that will keep coming up, he's done a lot of research in this area. What he says is this: there is evidence that substantial church growth has taken place in Britain in recent decades. And this poses a real challenge to sociologists and historians and indicates the urgent need to research such growth. In other words, the popular myth is the church is dying out. It's not entirely true. The number of people going to church is still not the same as it was 30 years ago. Let me be clear about one thing. When he talks about the number of churches are the same as they were 30 years ago, the number of people in those churches is less. So there might be as many churches, but the number of people going to church is not the same as it was 30 years ago. So that's an interesting distinction to make. Okay. When I first read it, I thought, oh, that means there's... No, it doesn't mean that. It means that there's a lot of congregations, not necessarily, but it's the same number of people going. But if it's true that there's a myth about church decline, if it's still true today that churches are being planted and churches are able to grow, then we ought to be able to learn something from those that have got positive experience. Shouldn't we? That would make sense. The mechanical engineer in me says, here's the bit where we try and solve the problem. Here's the problem is, we're not seeing growth. So what are the ways we can change that? I think if we could identify the reasons to help the church grow, we could begin that process of reversing church decline. But I think it's more than just having the tools or having the programs. We've actually got to believe that church could grow. As I've talked with other colleagues in the URC, and I've attended Mission Council, and I've attended General Assembly in different roles, there is a general feeling in the URC, and I know you're not all URC, but there is a general feeling that it's just a one-way track. We're on the road to diminishing. We've got to continue to plan for less ministers. We've got to continue to plan for ministers having three or four congregations, because that's the only way. I don't hold that view. I may be in a minority, but I don't hold that view. I do think if we believed in ourselves more, and we believed that it was possible to grow the church, that we could. So, how are we doing for time? Oh, not too bad. You heard this reading earlier. I was saying to Melanie and Mark, what wonderful integration. And then Mark reminded me, I did tell them to use that reading. That's why it's so well integrated. It's the movement of the spirit. No, that's because you told all right. But you heard Nancy read this for us beautifully. We heard from verse 6, where Paul is writing, and he's actually talking about division, isn't he? He's saying, don't be divided. It doesn't matter who it was part of. But this is what Paul writes. From verse 6, wasn't it? I planted the seed, Apollos watered it, but God made it grow. So neither he who plants nor he who waters is anything, but only God who makes things grow. In other words, Paul planted, Apollos watered, but it was God who made the plant grow. So what does that short reading tell us about church growth? What do you think? What does it require? What are the themes that come out from that short reading? I'm going to get you to buzz again now, because you're dozing off. So, turn to someone near you. What does that reading say to us about church growth? And what might it be saying to us about Paul's example, the way Paul worked? Think a bit more wider about the way Paul worked during his time. So first of all, what's required for growing the church? And then what is Paul's example for us? Go, 2 minutes. Buzz. Okay, you've had long enough. That's it. You've covered everything, I'm sure. Melanie, are you ready? Ready to run. And it's straight up this time. Even better. Okay, so some thoughts then. What does the reading tell us in terms of church growth? Any thoughts?
God's timetable is very different from ours.
We expect absolute
results.
Yeah, yeah. God's timetable, it takes time. Different people are involved over different times. Yeah, that could be one thing. What are you two doing? I won't tell you what it looked like. Sorry, no, back to where you were. Another idea.
Can I pass on a bit out of this book?
Certainly, yeah.
A woman dreamt that a new shop had opened in the high street. Out of curiosity, she went in, and to her surprise, God was behind the counter. Oh, she said, what do you sell here? Everything your heart desires, said God. Hardly daring to believe her ears, she decided to ask for everything a person could wish for. I want health and happiness and wisdom and peace of mind, she said. And as an afterthought, she added, not just for me and my family, but for everyone in the whole world. God smiled. I think you've got me wrong, my dear, he said. We don't sell fruits here, only seeds.
Oh, very good. That's what the book is. What's the book?
Invitations by Francis Dewar.
Invitations by Francis Dewar. Yeah. Thank you. I've not seen that one before. That's very good. Thank you. Yes. I have a belief that none of us are here by mistake. We are here because God wanted us to be here at Holiday Forum this year.
I'm noticing in Birmingham, especially in the winter, you find a lot of seagulls. When I remarked to somebody about these seagulls, they said when the weather's bad on the coast and they can't stand the temperature, they do fly over more inland, and there's also more food. But after that, I'd like to see some penguins walking about.
Well, I wouldn't have expected penguins. Seagulls, maybe. But it's a strange thing. We've been on holiday recently in Spain, and we were looking around, we were at the coast, and we said, where are all the seagulls? Now, obviously, in Birmingham. any other thoughts from the Regis? Bognor Regis, that's what I mean. Anything about Paul now? Anything?
We were talking about Paul and how he was a man within the people and how he nurtured the people, the congregations, and then kept writing to them and to make sure they were on the right track.
Brilliant. Thank you. Yes. I'm glad, Kate. Both did well.
The message I'm getting from this is that we're all Christians. Anglicans, everyone, we're all Christians and we all worship, but we put the barriers up. We are the URC, you are the Methodists, you are the Anglicans, and we should be mingling, but we're all Christians.
Absolutely. Yeah, and in some parts of the country, I sometimes forget this because Reading is a fantastic place, as I've already said. We work very well ecumenically, but you're absolutely right, there are times when barriers pop up, and I know MEPs are struggling. Any of you from MEPs, local ecumenical projects? They're quite unusual now because there's a bit of a struggle as different churches are saying, well, actually, can't really sustain this type of church. But again, yeah, it's about barriers. We need to break down some of those barriers between churches.
I'm just going to very quickly to say that down in and on the coast from Bognor, when he's from Rustington through to Selsey, we are a united area. With the Methodists.
Right.
Now, I hate to say this, bless her heart, but we had a very, just started a few years ago, there was a very good Methodist who was much involved, and unless his job was taken over by a Kenyan lady. Now, I don't think I couldn't be less, racist, because we had an old ministry in Johannesburg, high to a party. But, oh dear, oh dear, she's so Methodist. Yeah. Even, she's circuit superintendent and chair of this, and we were doing so well. And she's said so.
It does make a huge difference. I'm not going to pretend it doesn't. The people you've got around you, the leadership that you've got, make a huge difference. And if someone is so steeped in their own tradition that they can't relate to, particularly in united areas, it's really hard. Okay.
I was asked just recently to write an article for the Catholic Bridge, which is a local Christian newsletter that goes around the community, which is 50 years old. And they wanted people to write about something that had happened, say, 50 years ago. That's if they could remember that far back, which of course I can. And something struck me that at this very time, 50 years ago, I was chairing a conference for the London Ecumenical Youth Fellowship, which was effectively an ecumenical group of representatives from all the churches in London. And we were so full of what could be done together. Soon after that, the fellowship folded up. The Anglicans and Methodists began to talk and never did anything. We started talking Presbyterians, congregations, and ended up with United Reformed Church. 22 years ago, I think it was probably the same group got together here and produced the Swanwick Declaration of a united church in this country in its diversity. And we are here again 22 years later after that one. And we're all getting a wee bit past it.
And the Anglicans are saying the same thing.
Yes, yes.
I think our discussion was about the fact that if we don't plant something and we don't look after it, then God will help us, but we've got to plant and we've got to, it requires action from us to look after it.
Thank you. Yes, the growing theme, I think we'll stop there with responses. The growing theme is an important one, I think. Any of you that have tended plants, we have an allotment as well as a beautiful garden. And you know what it's like. If you don't tend to those little seedlings, they die off quite quickly. You know, they need a drag and that's it. They fall over and keel over and you've lost that crop. As I looked through it, there were a couple of things. Paul talks about working together, doesn't he? Apollos, Paul, others helped to grow the church. They had the vision to do so. And they prioritised growth. Paul, quite clearly, as you go through the Acts of the Apostles and so on, he's got this vision to grow the church, to keep planting it. He keeps going out to different places, keeps moving on. And it requires nurturing, as Gay said. But I think there's some other things, sort of looking more widely at Paul and the way he works. He works not only with established communities, but he sets up new ones. So not only establishing new worshipping communities, but also keeping in touch by letter with those that have already been set up. He goes and visits. When there's a problem, he responds by letter, or he says, I'm on my way, I'll come and help sort out the issues. And he offered advice and support. In fact, a number of the letters that Paul writes, we don't have the letter that they wrote to Paul, we just have his response. And some of the biblical scholars try and untangle, well, what were the questions that were being asked of Paul? That's for another conference. But we know that that's the way he worked. He offered advice, he visited, he kept in touch. I'm going to move on now. We had the book of the day. This is report of the day. And it's a lovely purple cover. I have this in booklet form, but you can have this for free as a download onto your computer. Now, some of you may have already downloaded it. It's only short. Depends on what kind of books you read. It's 29 pages. Big type though, big typeface. I like big books. I like short books as well. If you have only got time to read two pages of this book, read pages 5 and 6. There's a summary. They call it executive summary. Sounds rather posh. But actually, a lot of what I'm going to say this week is here on these two pages. So if you sleep through the rest of the conference, the rest of this week, just turn to pages 5 and 6, you've got it all there. But I'm hopefully going to unpack some of us there. I'm not just going to read these two pages over and over again. But I can do that if you want to. Pages 5 and 6, from anecdote to evidence. Now, remember the name David Goodhue? He was the coordinator of this team of research. And it wasn't just one research team. There was three or four. Mark and I, one of the last times we met up, actually, before we got involved in Holiday Forum and going on to steering group meetings. One of the things that we did was that we attended the launch of this report. Now, the Anglicans do things slightly differently. Just put your hand up if you're Anglican. Sorry, I was wondering, which area are you in?
Cambridge,
that's fine.
And I was URC, and I'm still associated.
Lovely.
I used to be Anglican.
Okay.
I'm a Christian.
Some of my best friends are Anglicans. It's just fine. In case it gets back to the Bishop of Reading, The Anglicans do things differently. So we had this. It was this invitation to this conference, and there were a couple of hundred people, 200-300 people, you think, Mark? Swanky hotel in the middle of London. You could tell it wasn't URC because this wasn't some dusty old church hall. And this was. It was nice, wasn't it, Mark? Really nice. And we were the only two URC people there. So we kind of huddled together in a corner. No, they were lovely. But it was quite clear there was a gathering of bishops, some of the researchers from the different teams that had come together, and some really high-powered Anglicans. That they had the air of business people. Do you know what I mean? You know, the suits and the waistcoats and that kind of thing. they have the air of people that know what they're doing and they're sort of planning. So this is very much a high-powered presentation about the research. But what it said was, again, stuff that we're quite familiar with. quite, we actually know this stuff, and we've known it for a while. But I want to recommend to you this book, because what the title says is, this is going from what people have been saying to each other, to actually this is the evidence. We've surveyed, we've visited, we've seen the projects, we've looked at what are the factors that are the key ingredients in churches that are growing. Because there are some things that are common. There are some things which are completely irrelevant. One of the things that they discover is that it doesn't matter whether your minister is male or female. It doesn't matter whether your minister is evangelical or liberal. There is still a potential for church growth. The churchmanship is not significant. But there are things that are significant. We'll come on to those during the week. Okay, so I'll keep it. When I refer to this, I'll let you know. I want you to chat again. Oh, we're getting near to time. So just for 1 minute this time. What do you think? Can you think of a church that has experienced growth? And what would be the reasons you perceive that it has grown? So you may not know of any churches that have grown. But if you know of one, it doesn't have to be the one you go to. If you know of a church that's grown, can you think of one reason why you think it might have grown? Off you go. Talk to each other. Okay, sorry to interrupt again, but we're only 10 minutes from coffee, so pressure's on there. Melanie, are you ready once more? I'm only going to take four responses. So, from your experience, can someone tell me one?
Lots of activity by a minister and his wife bringing in children, children, families, young people, and they've stayed even though we're now in Venice.
Okay, so the experience of an enthusiastic minister, male or female.
Two churches where a second congregation has been set up. Side back effect is that the congregations don't talk to each other.
Okay, that's an interesting one about the models of church. We'll come on to that later on this week. So, another congregation being set up separate from the existing congregation.
Some of the churches are non-church, I mean, churches that don't meet in churches.
Yes.
They haven't got the trappings of churches.
Churches that meet in leisure centres, churches that meet in schools. And a lot of significant church growth in those churches. Interesting to see now what's happening, where a number of those are beginning to save up and buy their own property. And that's going to be a change as those new churches become more established.
I think it's the African church here, because they've got flexibility with their services, and I think they really value each other and there's genuine care and concern. It's not, you walk in as a newbie, say, they don't know what to do with a new person.
Absolutely. I think that's really important. The way some fellowships can make you feel so welcomed and so much part of it. Now, there might be a downside to that. I remember Susie and I walked into a church, which remained nameless, because this could get back. I don't even know if it's still going. But at the church in Bournemouth, where it was clear they'd never had anyone in under the age of 40 for about 10 years, because they pounced on us. It was like, whoa, we wanted to so welcome you into our church. But we thought we'd never go back there again. So getting that welcome right is so important, isn't it? You want people to feel welcome and feel integrated, but you don't want to feel so swamped that they're going to give you every single job that's ever existed. Because you can make people feel like that. So that's a really interesting one. But you're absolutely right. The sense of fellowship is really important, and the way we care for one another is really important. I'm going to quickly move through these. This is a caterpillar, obviously, and we know that caterpillars turn into beautiful butterflies. Some creatures have very different life cycles, and I wonder what the life cycle of a church might look like. You know, we all know of churches that have flourished in the past and are now closing. We all know of those. So is there something about a life cycle for a church? There was a huge church building program about 100 years ago. It's why a lot of us have got Victorian and Edwardian buildings that are crumbling around our necks. They're not always helpful to have. But there might be a life cycle. It might be that they need to die in order that new churches are planted. Yeah. This is a cartoon again, Wes Les. This is for you, Les. This is a way of making your church look fuller. 10 people at the top, sitting on a pew. 10 people in chairs. Yes. How many of us have changed chairs in the church? Yes, we've got chairs instead of pews. Yes, quite a few of us. But what we next need to do is get chaise long. Because then 10 people on chaise long takes up two rows, and it will make the church look a whole lot fuller. So the lessons learned are, it's easier to make a church look full if the pews are replaced by chairs. It's even easier to make a church look full if pews are replaced by chaise long. My computer likes it so much better.
Have you practically
not
during the sermon?
No, not during the sermon. We might all doze off, might we? Here's a little saying that I picked up on a leadership course 20 years ago when I was an elder. I was an elder at quite a young age. Are we keepers of the aquarium or fishers of men? Was the original. Or fishers of people. Are we keepers of the aquarium or fishers of people? And it will be no surprise to you that the person that said it was from a more evangelical church than the URC that I attended. But I found this is one of those phrases that's really stuck in my head. Do we focus on the people who are already part of our church community? Or do we still have eyes that can look outside of the fish tank into the other community? And think about how do we bring people into our fish tank. Now, I don't want to say that analogy too far, but it seems a bit insular. But there is something about, are we just focused on keeping things going for ourselves, or are we looking beyond? And I'll be honest with you, I know that most of you will come from churches that do a huge amount in your community. You'll be running toddler groups, you'll be running food banks. I bet that's a huge area at the moment. You'll be running classes for people that are homeless or for unemployed and all that kind of thing. But there is something about, are we fishing for people to be part of the kingdom of God? Or are we just keepers of the aquarium? If we had time, you could have thought about this one. Where is your focus in your local congregation? And I don't mean to criticise anyone. And you know, whenever I'm preaching, I always know I'm preaching to myself as well. Does your church focus more on the people already in the church than those who are not yet in the church? And as a minister, it's a real dilemma. You know, do I go and visit Doreen, who's poorly? We'll say. She's never poorly, but if. Do I go and visit Doreen? Or do I go and visit that new family that have only been once, and we might never see them again? Yeah? We all have that dilemma. As an elder, you know, do I visit the people in my pastoral group that I saw on Sunday? Or do I go to the ones that we haven't seen for 2 or 3 weeks? Do I only visit the ones that I relate well to? Because they always make me a nice cup of tea. Do you know what I mean? Who do we focus on? Where do we spend our energies? And then think about the activities that your church... I mean, I think about our church, and we've got house groups for people that are already in the church. We've got a friendship club, but that's mainly for people in the church. We've got
toddler group.
That reaches people that are not in the church, doesn't it? That's mainly people that are not in the church. So how many activities are just for people that are already there? How many reach beyond our church community? Something like Alpha is good for people to come and experience more about what it means to be a Christian. It's not the only course. There are lots of other courses for different people in different places. And then how many bridging activities? We mentioned Scouts and Boys Brigade earlier. Boys Brigade, as part of their programme, have to come to church as part of their church parade programme. But the Girl Guides have removed God from their promise. The Scouts, there's less and less emphasis. There's less and less emphasis on the spiritual nature. Now, it might depend on the leaders. If you've got leaders who are church members, they're far more likely to build that gap between the worshipping community and the Scout or the Guide group. But how many bridging activities? Are there social activities where people can meet? Your pub quiz last night was fantastic. It is exactly the kind of activity you can do with people from any part of the community. Because lots of people go out and enjoy a pub quiz. Okay.
Coffee.
Nearly time, coffee. You have 1 minute and 34 seconds. Quote from the book. From the report. This is today's quote from the book. Common ingredient, strongly associated with growth in churches of any size, place or context. So any church, whether it's a small one or a big one, in a city or in a village, being intentional in prioritising growth. In other words, saying we're going to make it our purpose, one of our purposes for this year, to grow our church. If we don't make it a priority, if we don't make it an intention, something we're deliberately going to do, it isn't going to happen by accident. That's one of the findings of this group of researchers published this year. And finally, a word of encouragement. This is actually from a poem, I think. And it's these words. No spring nor summer beauty. Sorry. No spring nor summer beauty hath such grace as I have seen in one autumnal face. And there's a beautiful autumnal face on our screens. As a reminder for us all, every one of us has a role to play in growing the church. From the youngest to the oldest. Your role may well change as the years go by. But your wisdom is valuable. Your encouragement to others is valuable. And your prayers are always valuable. Encouragement of one another, I think, has got to be one of our things that will help us to grow. Paul wrote specifically to congregations to encourage them. I love the way in some of his openings he says, remember me to so-and-so, and so-and-so, and so-and-so. Remember to tell them, I'm praying for them every single day. That word of encouragement says, actually, we know it's not always easy in church life. It's not always easy. In prioritising growth, it might not be easy. There might be challenges. But I want to encourage you. So, I think it's coffee time. Thank you for listening so well. Thank you for your responses. You've been fantastic. I look forward to seeing you again tomorrow morning.